Sorry, what was that? Oh, what am I thinking about? Well, to be honest, I was cleaning up this table and suddenly found myself thinking about some things that Jesus said to some of us before he died and rose again. He had this way of putting things that were all at once so simple, so profound, and yet also so challenging to put into practice. Sorry, what? You want to know what Jesus had said to me that got me thinking today? Well, it has to do with what I'm doing here, actually, waiting tables. I didn't think that this would be part of my job description as a follower of Jesus, but alas, here I am. Early on in my journey with Jesus, I had this impression that I might be able to move up the ranks. To become one of his greatest disciples, I would help him usher in the kingdom of God, on earth. See him take his rightful place as king, and maybe even have one of those privileged places in his royal court. Well, you can see from my current attire that things didn't exactly turn out as I had planned. Although, in a strange, upside-down kind of way, they did. What was that? Oh, what do I mean by upside down? That's going to take some explanation. I'm not sure if you are aware. Maybe someone just talked to you about this. I'm not sure. But I serve in our church as a deacon. It's a role with a diverse job description, a servant of many sorts. Sometimes I wait tables. Sometimes I visit the sick. Sometimes I assist in worship. And other times I kick up the dust running errands, all as a representative of Jesus, my Lord. You won't see me schmoozing with high-ranking government officials, and the royal court of my Lord is certainly not in an ornate temple. Instead, I associate with many folks, others often refuse to. I minister to those who have been written off or excluded in wider society. And I do it all in spaces just like this, a dining hall. One key need, as you can see, is to feed hungry folks. And so here I am. Not quite what I had planned, but over time I learned that this is what Jesus has asked of me as his trusted disciple. This is what ushers in the kingdom of God. It's an upside-down vision of how to run a kingdom, but a lot of what Jesus said tended to turn the tables on our thinking. Okay, well, it was tough actually for me at first, if I'm going to be honest. When the church first called me into this role, I resisted. I hate to say it, but I thought it was beneath me. I had social aspirations in my local community that I couldn't see any realistic chance of fulfilling if I took on this subservient role. Servants don't change the world, I thought. Powerful people do. And I knew powerful people. People with influence, people who could really reshape the community and put the church on the map. Not only do powerful people not associate with servants, but they most certainly do not take on the role of servants. That would be to communicate weakness to the wider world, not strength. And strength was what we needed to advance our cause. How else were we going to be successful in this world? The world plays by certain rules, right? And if we want to grow the church, then we'll need to play by those rules too. All for a good cause. At least, that's what I used to think. That is, until James and John helped me see the light. I still remember that day when James and John took me aside at one of the assembly meetings and told me a story about what Jesus had said to them about being servants. They were traveling with the disciples on the road up to Jerusalem one day when during one of their rest stops, Jesus, my goodness, can you imagine this? Let them all know that not long from then he would be killed and then would rise again. Now you would think that this news would have shaken the disciples to the core, but James told me that it was almost like they couldn't hear it. They couldn't believe Jesus would die. They couldn't believe that God's servant would be abandoned by God like that. And so it was like his words didn't even reach their ears. Then, without skipping a beat, James and John went up to him and, listen to this, asked him to do whatever they asked of him. Do whatever they asked of him. I know, right? Bold, especially given what Jesus had just shared. It gets better, though. Jesus humored them, saying, what is it you want me to do for you? Their response, grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory. When James and John first told me that they said this, I was shocked, but not out of a sense of anger. No, I had to commend them. I mean, you don't move up in the world unless you assert yourself, and they were certainly doing that. Even if it meant stepping on some toes, and step on toes they did. All of the disciples with James and John were shocked that they would make such a request, especially given the fact that all the other disciples were literally right there. Apparently, some of the angry disciples said, yeah, kind of like that. What do you imagine, that we're going to bow down at your feet too? Evidently, the disciples were no different than all of us, squabbling for power and position in the group. At this point, James and John recounted with a look of regret in their eyes. What does that look like? They said that Jesus spoke to them from out of the noise of angry murmuring. And do you know what he said? He said, you do not know what you are asking. Like I said before, Jesus gave responses like this quite often. It was his way of signaling that we often misunderstand what Jesus and his upside-down kingdom is all about. James and John then repeated to me the words of Jesus that would change my life trajectory, leading me here to this table and to this role of deacon in the assembly of believers. He said this, you know that among the Gentiles, that's all the nations, all the world, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. James said that you could have heard a pin drop for the whole rest of their trip to Jericho on their way to Jerusalem. It was a lot for them to take in. John said that at that time, despite Jesus' best efforts to tell them otherwise, most of the disciples had assumed that following Jesus and announcing the kingdom of God that he was bringing would soon put them into positions of power and greatness, like the rulers among the Gentiles around them. When the world around you is ruled by emperors, prefects, and tetrarchs, not to mention armies, it's not a stretch to begin to think that hierarchy and power, control and dominance, and above all, glory and popularity are the needed ingredients for success. You should have seen the parades that the emperor and his military put on to flex their muscles and show just how great Rome was, how it was the greatest, the first and only empire that could bring true peace. Crowds would gather for these parades, and praise would be heaped upon the great, unshakable Rome. Rulers would proudly ride in on their chariots, and in their wake would often follow the spoils of war, defeated peoples, now slaves, herded like animals along the road to the Temple of Jupiter, humiliated. If I'm honest, living as a people under this empire, many of us disciples of Jesus secretly hoped we could gain this kind of power and control. Can you blame us? No one deserves to be conquered and humiliated, and if the best way to avoid being conquered is to conquer, well then, so be it. In our ideal world, then, Jesus would be at the top, like the emperor, and we could be his commanding officers. In essence, swap all the figures of Rome out and put us there instead. And if John and James had their way, they would be in this scenario, being the honored officers of Christ, the emperor, sitting at his right and left. But Jesus didn't think that way. His response to James and John's request was proof of that. Jesus used categories like great and first, but he redefined them entirely. He flipped them upside down. Not so among you, he said. Jesus claimed that it is the servant and the slave of all that is the greatest and the first in God's kingdom. A total contradiction, according to any known standard of great and first in the Roman Empire. Those are the humiliated ones, the ones paraded down Main Street to the jeers and mocking of the crowd, paraded into the courts of the wealthy to do their bidding. And yet somehow, as we heard this, as I heard this from James and John, and as they heard it then, we came to see that Jesus was speaking the truth, and that it was the Gentile image of greatness that was the lie. We came to see that the desire for power and control over others would only perpetuate kingdoms and cycles of violence and destruction, as it had throughout history. Jesus disrupted the cycle. He was bringing a kingdom that did not play according to the rules of the world, but brought God's shalom. You know, after James and John shared this with me, I found myself remembering the words of the prophet Micah. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? There's nothing in the prophet's words about ushering in a worldly kingdom of power and glory, nothing in there about sitting on the left and right hand of the throne. What there is in the prophet's words is a call for each of us to do justice through caring for the lowly and the outcast, a call to love kindness instead of social status and fame, and a call to humility under God's reign, not our own reign. Honestly, guys, the hardest part of heeding this call from Jesus has been that it has made me take an honest look inward and ask, where in my life am I trying to rule over and control others? And who do I choose to recognize as my ruler? The God revealed in Jesus the servant, or the false gods of wealth, power, and glory? Well, I hope this has given you a bit of an explanation for how I ended up here waiting tables, and how I've come to see this not as failure, but as success in God's eyes. How indeed what I desired to be Jesus's trusted servant, ushering in the kingdom, is exactly what I found myself doing by being a deacon in the church. Well, okay. Before I should probably get this cleaned up here and prepare for the next group of hungry folks. Before I go, though, I forgot to mention one thing. Jesus said this to James and John, and I replay it over and over in my head. He said, "The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for a ransom for many." You know, every day that I wait tables here, visit with the sick, or assist in worship, or run errands, I remind myself that these were all down-to-earth things that Jesus did too, and that we are called to imitate him in doing likewise. Jesus said he came to give his life a ransom for many. I've come to see how Jesus has made it possible, through his death and resurrection, for you and I and all of us disciples of his way, to also give our lives in this way, to be baptized with the baptism of his self-giving, to give our lives in service to God's kingdom of justice, kindness, and humility, so that God can continue to free the world from enslavement to the injustice and hatred and arrogance that keeps it in chains. I hope, I really do hope, that you can believe this. And whether or not you take on a formal role of a deacon in your church, I hope you'll consider how the calling to be a servant is every disciple's calling, and that you would put it into practice. Well, back to work. Thanks for listening.